If you can get a handle on this law, you will see the incredible impact of leadership on every aspect of life. So here it is. Leadership ability is the lid that determines a person's level of effectiveness. The lower an individual's ability to lead, the lower the lid on his potential. The higher the leadership, the greater the effectiveness. To give you an example, if your leadership rates an 8, then your effectiveness can never be greater than a 7. If your leadership is only a 4, then your effectiveness will be no higher than a 3. Your leadership ability, for better or for worse, always determines your effectiveness and the potential impact of your organization. Let me tell you a story that illustrates the law of the lid. In 1930, two young brothers named Dick and Maurice moved from New Hampshire to California in search of the American dream. They had just gotten out of high school, and they saw few opportunities back home. They headed straight for Hollywood, where they eventually found jobs in a movie studio. After a while, they opened a theater in Glendale, a town about 5 miles northeast of Hollywood. But despite all their efforts, they just couldn't make the business profitable. The brothers' desire for success was strong, so they kept looking for better business opportunities. In 1937, they finally struck on something that worked. They opened a small drive-in restaurant in Pasadena, located just east of Glendale. People in Southern California had become very dependent on their cars, and the culture was changing to accommodate that, including its businesses. Dick and Maurice's tiny drive-in restaurant was a great success, and in 1940, they decided to move the operation to San Bernardino, a working-class boom town 50 miles east of Los Angeles. They built a larger facility and expanded their menu from hot dogs and fries and shakes to include barbecued beef and pork sandwiches, hamburgers, and other items. Their business exploded. Annual sales reached $200,000, and the brothers found themselves splitting $50,000 in profits every year, a sum that put them in the town's financial elite. In 1948, their intuition told them that times were changing, and they made modifications in their restaurant business. They streamlined everything. They reduced their menu and focused on selling hamburgers. They reduced their cost and the prices they charged customers. And they also created what they called the speedy service system. Their kitchen became like an assembly line, where each person focused on service with speed. Their goal was to fill each customer's order in 30 seconds or less. And they succeeded. By the mid-1950s, annual revenue hit $350,000, and by then, Dick and Maurice split net profits of about $100,000 each year. He later admitted, "It was my last chance to be a boy." He was 55 years old. On January 6, 1919, at his home in New York, Theodore Roosevelt died in his sleep. Then Vice President Marshall said, "Death had to take him sleeping, for if Roosevelt had been awake, there would have been a fight." When they removed him from his bed, they found a book under his pillow. Up to the very last, Roosevelt was still striving to learn and improve himself. He was still practicing the law of process. If you want to be a leader, the good news is that you can do it. Everyone has the potential. But it isn't accomplished overnight. It requires perseverance. And you absolutely cannot ignore the law of process. Leadership doesn't develop in a day. It takes a lifetime. Leadership law number 4, the law of navigation. Anyone can steer the ship, but it takes a leader to chart the course. In 1911, two groups of explorers set off on an incredible mission. Though they used different strategies and routes, the leaders of the teams had the same goal: to be the first in history to reach the South Pole. Their stories are life and death illustrations of the law of navigation. One of the groups was led by Norwegian explorer Roald Amundsen. Before his team was ever set off, Amundsen had painstakingly planned his trip. He studied the methods of the Eskimos and other experienced Arctic travelers, determining that their best course of action would be to transport all the equipment and supplies by dog sled. When he assembled his team, He chose expert skiers and dog handlers. His strategy was simple. The dogs would do most of the work as the group traveled 15 to 20 miles in a 6-hour period each day. They would allow both the dogs and the men plenty of time to rest each day for the following day's travel. Amundsen's forethought and attention to detail were incredible. He located and stocked supply depots all along the route. That way, they would not have to carry every bit of their supplies with them for the whole trip. He also equipped his people with the best gear possible. Amundsen had carefully considered every possible aspect of the journey, thought it through, and planned accordingly. And it paid off. The worst problem they experienced on the trip was an infected tooth that one man had to have extracted. The other team of men was led by Robert Falcon Scott, a British naval officer with previous Antarctic exploration experience. Scott's expedition was the antithesis of Amundsen's. Instead of using dog sleds, Scott decided to use motorized sledges and ponies. In that area, even occasional lapses are lethal. Why? Because trust is the foundation of leadership. All effective leaders know this truth. PepsiCo Chairman and CEO Craig Weatherup says that people will tolerate honest mistakes, but if you violate their trust, you will find it very difficult to ever regain their confidence. Another strong leader, General Norman Schwarzkopf, affirmed that same principle when he said, "Leadership is a potent combination of strategy and character, but if you must be without one, be without strategy." You cannot separate character and leadership credibility. They always go hand in hand. Anthony Harrigan, president of the U.S. Business and Industrial Council, said, "The role of character always has been the key factor in the rise and fall of nations. And one can be sure that America is no exception to this rule of history. We won't survive as a country because we are smarter or more sophisticated, but because we are, we hope, stronger inwardly." In short, character is the only effective bulwark against internal and external forces that lead to a country's disintegration or collapse. Character creates trust, and trust makes leadership possible. That is the law of solid ground. Whenever you lead people, it is as if they consent to take a journey with you. The way that trip will turn out is predicted by your character. With good character, the longer the trip is, the better it seems to get. But if your character is flawed, the longer the trip is, the worse it is. That's true because no one enjoys spending time with someone he doesn't trust. Character communicates many things to followers. First, character communicates consistency. NBA great Jerry West commented, "You can't get too much done in life if you only work on the days when you feel good." Leaders without inner strength can't be counted on day after day because their ability to perform changes constantly. If your people don't know what to expect from you as a leader, at some point they won't look to you for leadership. Second, character communicates potential. John Morley observed, "No man can climb out beyond the limitations of his own character." That's especially true when it comes to leadership. And Craig Weatherup says, "You don't build trust by talking about it. You build it by achieving results, always with integrity, and in a manner that shows real personal regard for the people with whom you work. When people trust you, they believe your relationship has a future." Third, character communicates respect. When you don't have strength within, you can't earn respect without. And respect is absolutely essential for lasting leadership.
What would happen if a top expert with more than 30 years of leadership experience were willing to distill everything he had learned about leadership into a handful of life-changing principles just for you? It would change your life. John C. Maxwell has done exactly that. Combining the insight of 30-plus years of leadership successes and mistakes with observation from the worlds of business, politics, sports, religion, and military conflict, he has produced a revealing study of leadership, delivered as only a communicator like Maxwell can. Find out why Henry Ford nearly sent his own company into bankruptcy. Why some entrepreneurs receive plenty of money from venture capitalists while others can't get a dime. Why an unknown pastor in a developing country grew the size of his church from 700 to 14,000 people in 7 years. Listen as Dr. Maxwell outlines the basic laws of leadership that transcend time, place, culture, and situation. Laws that can be applied to business and private life. Follow them, and people will follow you. And now, America's expert on leadership, John C. Maxwell, with the 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership.
The 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership. Follow them, and people will follow you. I have the privilege of teaching leadership across the country and around the globe, and I often get the opportunity to talk with people who are attending one of my conferences for a second, third, or even fourth time. At a recent conference here in the United States, a man in his late 50s, whom I had met several years before, came up and spoke to me during a break. He grabbed my hand and shook it vigorously. He said, "Learning leadership has changed my life, but I wish I had heard you 20 years ago." "No, you don't," I answered with a chuckle. "What do you mean?" he said. "I would have achieved so much more. If I had known these leadership principles 20 years ago, I'd be in a totally different place in life. Your leadership laws have fueled my vision. They've given me the desire to learn more about leadership and accomplish my goals. If I'd learned these 20 years ago, I could have done some things that I had never even dreamed possible." "Maybe you would have," I answered, "but 20 years ago, I wouldn't have been able to teach them to you. For example, go to a meeting with a group of people you've never met before and watch them for 5 minutes. You'll know who the leader is. When somebody asks a question, who do people watch? Who do they wait to hear? The person they look to is the real leader. Try it. The next time you're in a meeting, look around you. You'll probably notice these differences between the two kind of leaders. Positional leaders speak first, where real leaders speak later. Positional leaders need the influence of the real leader to get things done. Real leaders need only their own influence to get things done. Positional leaders influence only the other positional leaders, where real leaders influence everyone in the room. If you see a disparity between who's leading the meeting and who's leading the people, then the person running the meeting is not the real leader. Many years ago, there was a game show called To Tell the Truth. Here's how it worked. At the opening of the show, three contestants claimed to be the same person. One of them was telling the truth. The other two were actors. A panel of celebrity judges took turns asking the three people questions. And when time was up, each panelist guessed which person was the real truth-teller. Many times, the actors bluffed well enough to fool the panelists and the members of the audience. When it comes to identifying a real leader, that task can be much easier if you remember what you're looking for. Don't listen to the claims of the person professing to be the leader. Instead, watch the reactions of the people around him. The proof of leadership is found in the followers. I have never been the real leader at any job when I started it, other than at the companies that I founded. When I took the first position in Hillham, Indiana, Claude was the leader. In my second church in Ohio, the real leader was a man named Jim. And when I went to Skyline in San Diego, the staff first followed Steve, not me. But let me tell you something. If you're starting in a new position and you're not the leader, don't let it bother you. The real test of leadership isn't where you start out, it's where you end up. So I must ask you this. How do people react when you communicate? When you speak, do people listen? I mean, really listen? Or do they wait to hear what someone else has to say before they act? You can find out a lot about your level of influence if you have the courage to ask and answer that question. That's the power of the law of E.F. Hutton. Leadership Law Number 6, The Law of Solid Ground. Trust is the foundation of leadership. People expect a lot from their leaders, but they will also forgive many things. They show patience with inexperience. They will overlook occasional mistakes based on poor ability. But one thing they won't do is trust someone who exhibits slips in character. Look at what happened several years ago at Cordant, the advertising agency formerly known as Saatchi & Saatchi. In 1994, institutional investors at Saatchi & Saatchi forced the board of directors to dismiss Maurice Saatchi, the company's CEO. What was the result? Several executives followed him out. So did many of the company's largest accounts, including British Airways and Mars, the candy maker. Saatchi's influence was so great that his departure caused the company's stock to fall immediately from 8 5/8 to $4 a share. What happened is a result of the law of influence. Saatchi lost his title and position, but he continued to be the leader. I personally learned the law of influence when I accepted my first job out of college at a small church in rural Indiana. I went in with all the right credentials. I was hired as the senior pastor, which meant that I possessed the position and title of a leader in the organization. I had the proper college degree. I had even been ordained. In addition, I had been trained by my father, who was an excellent pastor and a very high-profile leader in the denomination. It made for a good-looking resume, but it didn't make me a leader. But by the time I took my next leadership position 3 years later, I had learned the law of influence. I recognized that hard work was required to gain influence in any organization and to earn the right to become the leader. I admire and respect the leadership of my good friend, Bill Hybels, the senior pastor of Willow Creek Community Church in South Barrington, Illinois, the largest church in North America. Bill says he believes that the church is the most leadership-intensive enterprise in society. A lot of business people I know are surprised when they hear that statement, but I think Bill is right. What is the basis of his belief? Position-based leadership doesn't work in a volunteer organization. Because a leader doesn't have leverage or influence, he is ineffective. In other organizations, the person who has position has incredible leverage. In the military, leaders can use rank and, if all else fails, throw people into the brig. In business, bosses have tremendous leverage in the form of salary, benefits, and perks. Most followers are pretty cooperative when their livelihood is at stake. But in voluntary organizations, such as churches, the only thing that works is leadership in its purest form. Leaders have only their influence to aid them. And as Harry A. Overstreet observed, the very essence of all power to influence lies in getting the other person to participate. Followers in voluntary organizations cannot be forced to get on board. When I recently shared that observation with a group of about 150 CEOs from the automobile industry, I saw light bulbs going on all over the room. And when I gave them a piece of advice, they really got excited. I'm now going to share that same advice with you. If you're a business person and you really want to find out whether your people are capable of leading, send them out to volunteer their time in the community. If they can get people to follow them while they're serving at the Red Cross, a United Way shelter, or their local church, then you know that they really do have influence and leadership ability. One of my favorite stories that illustrates the law of influence concerns Abraham Lincoln. In 1832, years before he became president, young Lincoln gathered together a group of men to fight in the Black Hawk War. In those days, the person who put together a volunteer company for the militia often became its leader and assumed a commanding rank. In this instance, Lincoln had the rank of captain. But Lincoln had a problem. He knew nothing about soldiering. He had no prior military experience, and he knew nothing about tactics. He had trouble remembering the simplest military procedures. For example, one day, Lincoln was marching a couple of dozen men across a field and needed to guide them through a gate into another field, but he couldn't manage it. Recounting the incident later, Lincoln said, I could not for the life of me remember the proper word of command for getting my company endwise. Finally, as we came near the gate, I shouted, "This company is dismissed for 2 minutes, where it will fall in again on the other side of the gate." As time went by, Lincoln's level of influence with others in the militia actually decreased. While other officers proved themselves and gained rank, Lincoln found himself going in the other direction. He began with a title and position of captain, but that did him little good. He couldn't overcome the law of influence. By the end of his military service, Abraham Lincoln found his rightful place, having achieved the rank of private. Fortunately for Lincoln and for the fate of our country, he eventually overcame his inability to influence others. Over time and with much effort and personal experience, he became a person of remarkable influence and impact. My favorite leadership proverb is this: "He that thinks he leads but has no one following is only taking a walk." If you can't influence others, they won't follow you. And if they won't follow you, you're not a leader. That's the law of influence. No matter what anybody else tells you, remember that leadership is influence. Nothing more, nothing less. Leadership law number 3, the law of process. Leadership develops daily, not in a day. When I teach leadership at conferences, people inevitably ask me whether leaders are born. Followers need leaders who are able to effectively navigate for them. When they're facing life and death situations, that necessity becomes painfully obvious. But at other times, even though the consequences are not as serious, the need is just as great. The truth is, just about anyone can steer the ship, but it takes a leader to chart the course. That is the law of navigation. I remember the first time I really understood the importance of the law of navigation. I was 28 years old, and I was leading my second church, Faith Memorial, in Lancaster, Ohio. Before my arrival there in 1972, the church had experienced a decade-long plateau in its growth. But by 1975, our attendance had gone from 400 to more than 1,000, and I knew that we could keep growing and reach more people, but only if we built a new auditorium. It was going to be a huge multi-million-dollar project. Although that made it quite a challenge, that was not my greatest obstacle. What made the task tough was that right before I came on board at Faith Memorial, there had been a huge battle over a building proposal, and the debate had been vocal, divisive, and bitter. For that reason, I knew that as I led this project, I would experience genuine opposition to my leadership for the very first time. There were rough waters ahead, and if I, as a leader, didn't navigate us well, I could sink the ship. At that time, I developed a strategy that I have used repeatedly in my leadership. I wrote it as an acrostic, spelling out the words, "Plan Ahead," so that I would always be able to remember it. It says, the letter P, predetermine a course of action. The letter L, lay out your goals. The letter A, adjust your priorities. The letter N, notify key personnel. The letter A, allow time for acceptance. The letter H, head into action. The letter E, expect problems. The letter A, always point to the successes. And the letter D, daily review your plan. That became my blueprint as I prepared to navigate for my people. I knew exactly what our course of action needed to be. I had looked at every possible alternative, and I knew that building a new auditorium was our only viable solution. My goal was to design and build the facility, pay for it in 10 years, and unify all the people in the process. I started preparing for the congregational meeting where I would gain approval for the project. The first thing I did was direct our board members and a group of key financial leaders to conduct a 20-year analysis of our growth and financial patterns, covering the previous 10 years and projecting the next 10 years. Based on that, we formulated a 10-year budget that carefully explained how we would handle the financing. Who were these brothers? Their names were Dick and Maurice McDonald. That's right, the founders of McDonald's Hamburgers. They had hit the American jackpot, and the rest, as they say, is history, right? Wrong. The McDonald brothers never went any farther because their weak leadership put a lid on their ability to succeed. It's true that the McDonald brothers were financially secure. Theirs was one of the most profitable restaurant enterprises in the country. Their genius was in customer service and kitchen organization. That talent led to the creation of a new system of food and beverage service. In fact, they were so widely known in food service circles that people started writing them and visiting from all over the country to learn more about their methods. At one point, they received as many as 300 calls and letters every month. That led them to an idea of marketing the McDonald's concept. It looked like a way to make money without having to open another restaurant themselves. In 1952, they got started, but their effort was a dismal failure. The reason was simple. They lacked the leadership necessary to make it effective. Dick and Maurice were good restaurant owners. They understood how to run a business, make their systems efficient, cut costs, and increase profits. They were efficient managers, but they were not leaders. Their thinking patterns clamped a lid down on what they could do and become. At the height of their success, Dick and Maurice found themselves smack dab against the law of the lid. Then in 1954, the brothers hooked up with a man named Ray Kroc, who was a leader. As soon as he visited the store, he had a vision for its potential. In his mind, he could see the restaurant going nationwide in hundreds of markets. He soon struck a deal with Dick and Maurice, and in 1955, he formed McDonald's System Incorporated, later called the McDonald's Corporation. Kroc immediately bought the rights to a franchise so that he could use it as a model and prototype to sell other franchises. Then he began to assemble a team and build an organization to make McDonald's a nationwide entity. And in 1961, for the sum of $2.7 million, Kroc bought the exclusive rights to McDonald's from the brothers and proceeded to turn it into an American institution and global entity. The lid in the life and leadership of Ray Kroc was obviously much higher than that of his predecessors. In the years that Dick and Maurice McDonald had attempted to franchise their food service system, they managed to sell the concept to just 15 buyers, only 10 of whom actually opened restaurants. On the other hand, the leadership lid in Ray Kroc's life was sky high. Between 1955 and 1959, Kroc succeeded in opening 100 restaurants. 4 years after that, there were 500 McDonald's. Today, the company has opened more than 21,000 restaurants in no fewer than 100 countries. Leadership ability, or more specifically, the lack of leadership ability, was the lid on the McDonald brothers' effectiveness. I believe that success is within the reach of just about everyone. But I also believe that personal success without leadership ability brings only limited effectiveness. A person's impact is only a fraction of what it could be with good leadership. The higher you want to climb, the more you need leadership. The greater the impact you want to make, the greater your influence needs to be. Leadership ability is always the lid on personal and organizational effectiveness. If the leadership is strong, the lid is high. But if it's not, then the organization is limited. That's why in times of trouble, organizations naturally look for new leadership. When the country is experiencing hard times, it elects a new president. When a company is losing money, it brings in a new CEO. When a church is floundering, it searches for a new senior pastor. When a sports team keeps losing, it looks for a new head coach. Wherever you look, you can find smart, talented, successful people who are able to go only so far because of the limitation of their leadership. For example, when Apple got started in the late 1970s, Steve Wozniak was the brains behind the Apple computer. His leadership lid was low, but that was not the case for his partner, Steve Jobs. His lid was so high that he built a world-class organization and gave it a 9-digit value. That's the impact of the law of the lid. A few years ago, I met Don Stevenson, the chairman of Global Hospitality Resources Incorporated of San Diego, California, an international hospitality advisory and consulting firm. Over lunch, I asked him about his organization. Today, he primarily does consulting. But back then, his company took over the management of hotels and resorts that weren't doing well financially. They oversaw many excellent facilities, such as La Costa in Southern California. Don said that whenever his company came into an organization to take it over, they always started by doing two things. First, they trained all the staff to improve their level of service to the customers. And second, they fired the leader. When he told me that, I was at first surprised. "You always fire him?" I asked. "Every time?" "That's right," he said. "Every time." "Don't you talk to the person first to check him out to see if he's a good leader?" I said. "No," he answered. "If he'd been a good leader, the organization wouldn't be in the mess it's in." Leadership law number 7, the law of respect. People naturally follow leaders stronger than themselves. If you had seen her, your first reaction might not have been respect. She wasn't a very impressive-looking woman, just a little over 5 foot tall in her late 30s, with dark brown, weathered skin. She couldn't read or write. The clothes she wore were coarse and worn. When she smiled, people could see that her top two front teeth were missing. Her employment was intermittent. Most of the time, she took domestic jobs in small hotels, scrubbing floors, making up rooms, and cooking. But just about every spring and fall, she would disappear from her place of employment, come back broke, and work again to scrape together what little money she could. When she was present on the job, she worked hard and seemed physically tough. But she also was known to have her bouts where she would suddenly fall asleep, some coming in the middle of a conversation. She attributed her affliction to a blow to the head that she had taken during a teenage fight. Who would respect a woman like that? The answer is more than 300 slaves who followed her to freedom out of the South. They recognized and respected her leadership. So did just about every abolitionist in New England. The year was 1857. The woman's name was Harriet Tubman. While she was only in her 30s, Harriet Tubman came to be called Moses because of her ability to go into the land of captivity and bring so many of her people out of slavery's bondage. Tubman started life as a slave. She was born in 1820 and grew up in the farmland of Maryland. At age 24, she married John Tubman, a free black man. But when she talked to him about escaping to freedom in the North, he said that if she tried to leave, he'd turn her in. When she resolved to take her chances and go North in 1849, she did so alone without a word to him. Her first biographer, Sarah Bradford, said that Tubman told her, "I had reasoned this out in my mind. There was one of two things I had a right to, liberty or death. If I could not have one, I would have the other." Tubman made her way to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania via the Underground Railroad, a secret network of free blacks, white abolitionists, and Quakers who helped escaping slaves on the run. Though free herself, she vowed to return to Maryland and bring her family out. In 1850, she made her first return trip as an Underground Railroad conductor, someone who retrieved and guided out slaves with the assistance of sympathizers along the way. Just the facts, ma'am. Just the facts. Of all the laws of leadership, the law of intuition is probably the most difficult to understand. Why? Because it depends on so much more than just the facts. The law of intuition is based on facts plus instinct and other intangible factors. And the reality is that leadership intuition is often the quality that separates the great leaders from merely the good ones. Let me recount a conversation I had several years ago with a staff member named Tim Elmore that will give you some insight into the law of intuition. It occurred when we lived in San Diego and three players were competing on the Chargers football team for starting quarterback's position. Tim asked me who I thought would secure the job, and without hesitation I said, "Stan Humphreys." "Really?" Tim replied. "I didn't think he had a chance. He's not all that big, and they say he doesn't have a strong work ethic in the weight room. He doesn't even really look like a quarterback." "That doesn't matter," I said. "He's a better leader. Watch Stan play, and you'll see that he has the ability to read just about any situation, call the right play, and pull it off. He's the one who'll get the job. And Stan did get the job. He was so good that he was able to lead a fairly weak San Diego team to the Super Bowl in 1995. All professional quarterbacks have great physical talent. At the pro level, the differences in physical ability really aren't that significant. What makes one man a third-string backup and another a Hall of Famer is intuition. The great ones can see things that others can't, make changes, and move forward before their opponents know what's happening. The kind of informed intuition that quarterbacks have on game day is similar to what leaders exhibit. Leaders see everything with a leadership bias, and as a result, they instinctively, almost automatically, know what to do. You can see this read and react instinct in all great leaders. For example, look at the career of U.S. Army General Norman Schwarzkopf. Time after time, he was assigned commands that others avoided, but he was able to turn the situations around as a result of his exceptional leadership intuition and ability to act on what he sensed. When Schwarzkopf had been in the Army 17 years, he finally got his chance to command a battalion. It occurred in 1969 during his second tour of Vietnam as a lieutenant colonel. The command, which nobody wanted, was of the 1st Battalion of the 6th Infantry, called the 1st of the 6th. But because the group had such a horrible reputation, it was nicknamed the Worst of the 6th. Confirming this was the fact that, as he took command, Schwarzkopf was told that the battalion had just flunked an annual inspection, having scored an abysmal 16 out of 100 points. That's the nature of the law of connection. Always touch a person's heart before you ask for a hand. Leadership Law Number 11, the Law of the Inner Circle. A leader's potential is determined by those closest to him. In 1981, I received a marvelous offer. I was given the opportunity to become the leader of Skyline Church in San Diego, California, the largest church in my denomination. The church had a great history. It had been founded in the 1950s by a wonderful man named Orville Butcher. It was a good church with a nationally recognized reputation, but it did have one problem. It had not grown in years. As soon as we arrived in San Diego, my first priority was to meet with each of the staff members to assess their individual abilities. Almost immediately, I discovered why the church had flatlined. The staff were good people, but they weren't strong leaders. No matter what I did with them, they would never be able to take the organization to the place we needed to go. You see, every leader's potential is determined by the people closest to him. If those people are strong, then the leader can make a huge impact. If they are weak, he can't. That's the law of the inner circle. At a conference where I was teaching the law of the inner circle, Ashley Randall of Woodbine, Georgia, came up to me during a break and said, "John, you're right about the power of association with good people. I've competed in a couple of triathlons, and I can testify that I swim, bike, and run better on the day of the race than I do any other day of training. It's because I'm surrounded by people who are swimming, biking, and running at a higher level and doing it with me." In just about any arena of life, your potential is impacted by those closest to you. In my book, Developing the Leader Within You, I wrote about how I reviewed my life when I turned 40. I had the desire to keep going to a higher level and to make a greater impact, but I realized that I had leveraged my time as much as I possibly could. It would have been impossible to sharpen the focus on my priorities any more than it had already been. In other words, I could not work harder or smarter. That left me only one choice, learning to work through others. That's the day I truly understood the law of the inner circle. Since then, I have been committed to continually developing my inner circle. I hire the best staff I can find, develop them as much as I can, and hand off everything I possibly can to them. In 1994, I discovered one of the key members of my inner circle. At the time, Enjoy Stewardship Services, the second company that I founded, was about 2 years old, and it wasn't doing very well. One biographer said this of Lincoln's method. For a president to select a political rival for a cabinet post was not unprecedented, but deliberately to surround himself with all of his disappointed antagonists seemed to be courting disaster. It was a mark of his sincere intentions that Lincoln wanted the advice of men as strong as himself, or stronger, that he entertained no fear of being crushed or overridden by such men revealed either surpassing naivete or a tranquil confidence in his powers of leadership. Lincoln lived the law of empowerment. His security enabled him to give his power away. Lincoln's use of the law of empowerment was as consistent as Henry Ford's habit of breaking it. Even when his generals performed poorly, Lincoln took the blame. Lincoln expert Donald T. Phillips acknowledged, "Throughout the war, Lincoln continued to accept public responsibility for battles lost or opportunities missed. Lincoln was able to stand strongly during the war and continually give power to others because of his rock-solid security." The truth is that empowerment is powerful, not only for the person being developed, but also for the mentor. Enlarging others makes you stronger. But to give power away to others, you have to be secure yourself. That's the reality dictated by the law of empowerment. Leadership Law Number 13, the Law of Reproduction. It takes a leader to raise up a leader. This year in my leadership conferences, I've been taking time to conduct an informal poll to find out what prompted the men and women who attend to become leaders. The results of the survey are as follows. 10% of the people became leaders because of natural gifting, 5% as the result of crisis, and 85% of them became leaders because of the influence of another leader. If you've ever given much thought to the origins of leadership, then you're probably not surprised by those figures. More than 4 out of 5 of all leaders that you ever meet will have emerged as leaders because of the impact made on them by established leaders who mentored them. That happens because the law of reproduction. It takes a leader to raise up a leader. Of the people I surveyed, about 1/3 are leaders in the business world and 2/3 are leaders in churches. But the responses would be similar in just about any field. For instance, you will find the law of reproduction at work in professional football. Did you know that the development and mentoring of half of the head coaches working in the NFL this year can be traced to 2 outstanding former pro football leaders, Bill Walsh and Tom Landry? 10 current NFL head coaches spent a year or longer working for 3-time Super Bowl champion Bill Walsh, or for one of the top assistants that he trained. She said that funding her first company took 6 months and countless presentations, even though she had a viable idea and believed in it 100%. But the startup of her second company happened almost overnight. It took only 2 phone calls that lasted mere minutes for her to land $5 million in backing. When the word got out that she was starting her second company, people were dying to give her even more money. She said, "We had venture capitalists calling us and begging us to take their money. Why had everything changed so drastically for Judy Estrin? Because of the law of buy-in. People had bought into her, so they were ready to buy into whatever vision she offered, sight unseen." Every message that people receive is filtered through the messenger who delivers it. If you consider the messenger to be credible, then you believe the message has value. That's one of the reasons actors and athletes are hired to promote products. People buy Nike shoes because they have bought into Michael Jordan, not necessarily because of the quality of the shoes. The same is true when actors promote causes. Have the actors being employed suddenly become experts in the cause they're promoting? Usually not. But that doesn't matter. People want to listen to Charlton Heston as he speaks for the NRA, not because they believe he's an expert in the field of hunting or guns, but because they believe in him as a person and because he has credibility as an actor. Once people have bought into someone, they are willing to give his vision a chance. People want to go along with people they get along with. You cannot separate the leader from the cause he promotes. It just can't be done, no matter how hard you try. It's not an either-or proposition. The two always go together. Let me tell you what happens with followers depending on their attitude toward the leader and his cause. When followers don't like the leader or the vision, they look for another leader. When followers don't like the leader, but they do like the vision, they still look for another leader. When followers like the leader, but not the vision, they change the vision. When followers like the leader and the vision, they get behind both. If in the past you tried to get your people to act on your vision, but were unable to make it happen, you probably came up against the law of buy-in, maybe even without knowing it. I first recognized the importance of the law of buy-in back in 1972 when I accepted my second leadership position. I mentioned in the law of navigation that after I had been at the church several years, I took them through a multi-million-dollar construction program in which we built a new auditorium. But when I first got there, that was not the direction that the congregation had wanted to go. The week before I arrived at my church, more than 65% of the members had voted in favor of building a new activity center. The greatest leaders are able to connect on both levels, with individuals and with an audience. A perfect example was Ronald Reagan. His ability to develop rapport with an audience is reflected in the nickname he received as president, the Great Communicator. But he also had the ability to touch the hearts of individuals close to him. Former Reagan speechwriter Peggy Noonan said that when the president used to return to the White House from long trips and the staff heard his helicopter landing on the lawn, everyone would stop working, and staff member Donna Elliott would say, "Daddy's home." It was an indication of the affection his people felt for him. Some leaders have problems with the law of connection because they believe that connecting is the responsibility of the followers. That is especially true of positional leaders. They often think, "I'm the boss. I have the position. These are my employees. Let them come to me." But successful leaders who obey the law of connection are always initiators. They take the first step with others and then make the effort to continue building relationships. That's not always easy, but it's important to the success of the organization. When a leader has done the work to connect with his people, you can see it in the way an organization functions. Employees display an incredible loyalty and a strong work ethic. The vision of the leader becomes the aspiration of the people. The impact is incredible. You can also see the results of connection in other ways. For example, on Boss's Day, 1994, a full-page ad appeared in USA Today. It was contracted and paid for by the employees of Southwest Airlines, and it was addressed to Herb Kelleher, the company's CEO. It said, "Thanks, Herb, for remembering every one of our names, for supporting the Ronald McDonald House, for helping load baggage on Thanksgiving, for giving everyone a kiss, and we mean everyone, for listening, for running the only profitable major airline, for singing at our holiday party, for singing only once a year, for letting us wear shorts and sneakers to work, for golfing at the Love Classic with only one club, for out-talking Sam Donaldson, for riding your Harley-Davidson into the Southwest headquarters, for being a friend, not just a boss. Happy Boss's Day from each one of your 16,000 employees." A display of affection like that occurs only when a leader has worked hard to connect with his people. Don't ever underestimate the importance of building relational bridges between yourself and the people you lead. There's an old saying, "To lead yourself, use your head. To lead others, use your heart." Receive the backing of the board of directors, since his mother controlled 41% of Ford Motor Company's stock, and convinced his grandfather to step down so he could become president in his place. Young Henry was taking over a company that hadn't made a profit in 15 years. At that time, it was losing $1 million a day. The young president knew he was in over his head, so he began looking for leaders. And fortunately, he was able to recruit some good people and started turning the company around. If Henry Ford II had lived by the law of empowerment, the Ford Motor Company might have grown enough to eventually overtake General Motors and become the number one car company again. But only secure leaders are able to give power to others, and Henry felt threatened. The success of his executives made him worry about his own place at Ford. His position was based not on influence, but on his name and the family's control of the company's stock. So Henry began pitting one top executive against another. Any time an executive gained power and influence, Henry undercut the person's authority by moving him to a position with less clout, supporting his subordinates, or publicly humiliating him. This continued all the days Henry II was at Ford Motor Company. As one Ford president, Lee Iacocca, commented after leaving the company, Henry Ford, as I would learn firsthand, had a nasty habit of getting rid of strong leaders. Iacocca said that Henry Ford II once described his leadership philosophy to him. Ford said, "If a guy works for you, don't let him get too comfortable. Don't let him get cozy or set in his ways. Always do the opposite of what he expects. Keep your people anxious and off balance." Both the older and younger Henry Fords failed to abide by the law of empowerment. Rather than building up leaders, they undermined their best people because of their own insecurity. But to be successful as a leader, you have to be an empowerer. Theodore Roosevelt was right when he said, "The best executive is the one who has sense enough to pick good men to do what he wants done, and self-restraint enough to keep from meddling with them while they do it." Only secure leaders are able to give themselves away. Mark Twain once remarked that great things can happen when you don't care who gets the credit. But you can take that a step farther. I believe the greatest things happen only when you give others the credit. That's the law of empowerment in action. One of the greatest leaders of this nation was truly gifted at giving his power and authority to others. His name was Abraham Lincoln. The depth of his security as a leader can be seen in the selection of his cabinet. Most presidents pick like-minded allies, but not Lincoln. At a time of turmoil for the country, when opposing voices were many, Lincoln brought together a group of leaders who would unify his party and bring strength through diversity and mutual challenge. And five NFL coaches have a direct or indirect mentoring connection with the two-time Super Bowl winner Tom Landry, or one of the men that he trained. Just about every successful coach in the NFL has spent time working with another strong leader who helped to teach and model for him. It just shows that it takes a leader to raise up a leader. One of my favorite stories that illustrates the law of reproduction is about David of ancient Israel. Just about everyone has heard the story of David and Goliath. When the armies of the Philistines faced off against King Saul and the people of Israel, Goliath, a large, powerful, professional warrior, laid out a challenge. He said he'd fight Israel's greatest champion in a winner-take-all battle. And who stepped forward to accept the challenge? Not Saul, the mighty king, and not any of his seasoned veterans. David, a lowly shepherd boy, stood to face him, and using a sling, he hurled a rock at Goliath, knocked him out, and then cut the big warrior's head off with Goliath's own sword. We all identify with a story like that because we like to cheer for the underdog, but many people don't know the rest of the story. David grew up to be a warrior and eventually became king. But along the way, he raised up a group of great warriors who were called his mighty men. No fewer than five of them also became giant killers, just like their leader. Had Saul, the previous king, done that? No. Why? Because it took a person who had done it himself. And just as it takes a giant killer to produce other giant killers, it takes a leader to raise up other leaders. Once you understand the law of reproduction, you recognize its incredible impact on an organization. If a company has poor leaders, what little leadership it has will only get worse. If a company has strong leaders and they are reproducing themselves, then the leadership just keeps getting better and better. Occasionally, a company will emerge where the leadership is so strong and the development process is so deliberate that the impact not only drives the organization to the highest level, but it also overflows into other businesses. That is the case at General Electric, led by Chairman Jack Welch. GE has become one of the best-run companies in the world, and it keeps developing leader upon leader. In fact, the company has lost more leaders capable of running organizations than most other good companies are able to produce in their lifetimes. former GE leaders, have become CEOs of organizations such as General Dynamics, Allied Signal, Rubbermaid, Goodyear Tire and Rubber, Roar, Owens Corning Fiberglass, Media One, Equifax, Wang Laboratories, McDonnell Douglas, GTE, Apollo Computer, and American Express. Just as in the world of pro football, usually the more leadership ability a person has, the more quickly he recognizes leadership, or its lack in others. In time, people in the group get on board and follow the strongest leaders. Either that, or they leave the group and pursue their own agenda. I remember hearing a story from sports that shows how people come to follow strong leaders. It happened in the early 1970s when Hall of Fame basketball center Bill Walton joined Coach John Wooden's UCLA team. As a young man, Walton wore a beard. It has been said that the coach told him that his players were not allowed to have facial hair. Walton, attempting to assert his independence, said that he would not shave off his beard. Wooden's no-nonsense response was, "We'll miss you, Bill." Needless to say, Walton shaved the beard. There are many ways to measure a follower's respect for his leader, but perhaps the greatest test of respect comes when a leader creates major change in an organization. I experienced this test in 1997 when I moved my companies from San Diego, California to Atlanta, Georgia. I made the decision to move in early 1996 while I was on a cruise in China with my wife, Margaret. As we discussed the move and our expectations, I began weighing my level of influence with my core leaders. After mentally reviewing my personal history with each one and the strength of my leadership with them, I estimated that about 50% of them would be willing to uproot themselves and make the move across country with me and the organization. A few months later, after company president Dick Peterson and I worked through all the preliminaries of the move, I began the task of approaching my leaders individually to tell them about the decision to move. And one after another, the leaders told me they wanted to take the trip. I had expected about half to go. Imagine how delighted I was when I discovered that every single one of my core leaders was going with me, 100%. Why did so many make the trip? I know one of the reasons is that those leaders are difference makers, and they want to be a part of the vision of our organization. Another reason is that I've invested a lot of time and energy in my relationships with them, adding value to their lives. But there is another, more important reason. The two reasons I just named wouldn't have been enough if I would have been a weaker leader. Because I've spent my whole life developing my leadership skills, that has made it possible for me to lead other strong leaders. People who are nines and tens don't follow a seven. That's just the way leadership works. That's the truth of the law of respect. Leadership law number 8, the law of intuition. Leaders evaluate everything with a leadership bias. Do you remember the old television show Dragnet? If you do, then you probably know the phrase that Jack Webb made famous in it. The key to succeeding is momentum, what I call the Big Mo. Just as every sailor knows that you can't steer a ship that isn't moving forward, strong leaders understand that to change direction, you first have to create forward progress, and that takes the law of the Big Mo. Only a leader can create momentum. Followers catch it, and managers are able to continue it once it has begun. But creating it requires someone who can motivate others, not who needs to be motivated. Harry Truman once said, "If you can't stand the heat, get out of the kitchen." But for leaders, that statement should be changed to read, "If you can't make some heat, get out of the kitchen." Momentum really is a leader's best friend. Sometimes it's the only difference between losing and winning. That's why in basketball games, for instance, when the opposing team scores a lot of unanswered points and starts to develop too much momentum, a good opposing coach will call a timeout. He knows that if the other team's momentum gets too strong, his team is likely to lose the game. Momentum makes a huge difference in organizations. When you have no momentum, even the simplest task can seem to be insurmountable problems. But when you have momentum on your side, the future looks bright, obstacles appear small, and trouble seems temporary. Momentum does many things for you. For example, It makes leaders look better than they are. It helps followers perform better than they are. Though hard to start, momentum makes it easier to steer an organization. And momentum creates an environment where the leader can most effectively act as a change agent. As a leader, my greatest fight for momentum occurred at Skyline, my third church. I arrived there as a senior pastor in 1981, and as the church started growing, it didn't take long for me to recognize that we would need to relocate to sustain our growth. At first, I thought that wouldn't be a problem. A relocation that size isn't easy, but we were in a good position for the move. We had started to develop momentum. Morale among the people was very high. And also, I had the advantage of having experience leading both of my previous churches through building projects. But I failed to take into account the depth of San Diego bureaucracy and California's environmental protection laws. We started the relocation process in 1984. Because of local politics, neighborhood concerns, and environmental red tape, what appeared to be a 3-year project dragged out for more than 3 times that long. As it turned out, it took us 11 years just to get the zoning and the building permits approved. When the project finally received approval, I wasn't even the leader anymore. Jim Garlow, who followed me as senior pastor at the church, accomplished that along with a fine team of laypeople. The greatest challenge of my life as a leader was sustaining momentum during the last 5 years I was at Skyline. The people at most churches facing similar circumstances would have given up, and before long their churches would have shrunk in size, but not Skyline. What saved us? The answer can be found in the law of the Big Mo. I did everything possible during those years to build momentum. I continually kept the vision for the relocation in front of the people. We made it a habit to focus on what we could do rather than on what we couldn't. And we celebrated every victory, no matter how small. Meanwhile, we made progress in the areas that we could. We improved our small groups, making them very strong, and we continued to focus on developing leaders. It kept us going. The momentum we built was so strong that even that 11-year obstacle couldn't stop us. If your desire is to do great things with your organization, never overlook the power of momentum. It truly is a leader's best friend. If you can develop it, you can do almost anything. That's the power of the Big Mo. Leadership Law Number 17, the Law of Priorities. Leaders understand that activity is not necessarily accomplishment. Leaders never grow to a point where they no longer need to prioritize. It's something that good leaders keep doing, whether they're leading a small group, pastoring a church, running a business, or leading a billion-dollar corporation. I was reminded of that last year when I moved my companies from San Diego, California to Atlanta, Georgia. I used to think that I would live the rest of my life in San Diego. It's a gorgeous city with one of the best climates in the world. But then one day I sat down and I started to reevaluate my priorities. I fly a tremendous amount because of my speaking engagements and consulting work. I realized that because I lived in San Diego, I was losing too much time traveling just to various airline hubs in order to make connections. In 1996, I spent 27 days traveling back and forth just between San Diego and Dallas to make flight connections. That's when I decided to look into moving Enjoy and my other companies to an airline hub. Stephen Covey once said, "A leader is the one who climbs the tallest tree, surveys the entire situation, and yells, 'Wrong jungle!'" I felt a little like that when I realized what I was about to do. We finally settled on Atlanta as the ideal location. First, it was a major airline hub. From there, I would be able to reach 80% of the United States within a 2-hour flight. Second, the area is beautiful, and it offers excellent culture, recreational, and entertainment opportunities. Finally, I knew that Atlanta offered my people a chance to enjoy a good standard of living. The move was quite an undertaking, but it went smoothly thanks to the hard work and strong leadership of the people who work with me. Says only, "The reason we're successful in the marketplace is our focus on quality and our desire to keep things simple. The reason we're successful as a company is our good people." Since the early 1990s, Schnatter and Oney have developed a top-rate team of leaders. They are helping the company experience explosive growth in an industry that was thought to be glutted with competitors for over a decade. In 1997, they opened more than 350 new restaurants. In 1998, they expect the number to be more than 400, and they are also implementing plans to launch Papa John's internationally. They don't plan to stop growing until they are the largest seller of pizza in the world. The challenge now, says Olney, is developing the next leaders. You do that by building up people. John Schnatter and Wade Olney have succeeded because they have practiced the law of explosive growth. Any leader who does that makes the shift from followers' math to what I call leaders' math. Here's how it works. Leaders who develop followers grow their organization only one person at a time. But leaders who develop leaders multiply their growth, because for every leader they develop, they also receive all that leader's followers. Add 10 followers to your organization, and you have the power of 10 people. Add 10 leaders to your organization, and you have the power of 10 leaders times all the followers and the leaders they influence. That's the difference between addition and multiplication. That's why I say to add growth, lead followers, but to multiply growth, lead leaders. That's the law of explosive growth. Becoming a leader who develops leaders requires an entirely different focus from that of a developer of followers. Consider some of the differences. Leaders who develop followers need to be needed. Leaders who develop leaders want to be succeeded. Leaders who develop followers focus on weakness, while leaders who develop leaders focus on strengths. Leaders who develop followers develop the bottom 20%. Leaders who develop leaders develop the top 20%. Leaders who develop followers treat their people the same, while leaders who develop leaders treat their people differently. Leaders who develop followers hoard power. Leaders who develop leaders give power away. Leaders who develop followers spend time with others. Leaders who develop leaders invest time in others. Leaders who develop followers grow by addition, while leaders who develop leaders grow by multiplication. Leaders who develop followers impact only the people they can touch personally, while leaders who develop leaders impact people far beyond their own reach. I've made the development of leaders my focus in life for the last 20 years, not only in my organization, but also outside of them. As I mentioned previously, sometimes that takes me outside the United States.